Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. And this episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
I'm running out. I got to watch more old newsreel footage.
No, I think it's great. I honestly think it's great when sometimes you return to the classic newsreel footage type songs, and like that sounded like a sexy, jazzy elevator.
Yeah, there you go.
Felt like maybe I was in Mad Men. Of like some, there's some like jazzy music, and then ding, we're on the advertising floor. It's great.
We're on the 15th, baby.
We're actually on the 31st, the 31st episode of the Clone Wars Report. And this episode, we are discussing the two-episode arc of the show, which includes Blue Shadow Virus, Season 1, Episode 17, written by Craig Titley, directed by Giancarlo Volpe, and Mystery of a Thousand Moons, Season 1, Episode 18, written by Brian Larson, directed by Jesse Yee, or Ye. I apologize that I don't know exactly how to pronounce these names. Two weird and fun episodes, right, Ken?
Yes. Oh, yes. I can't wait to Yes.
Excellent. So here's the quick summary. The Naboo guard discover a horrible truth. Battle droids on Naboo. Padme, Jar Jar, and R2 investigate and discover a secret underground lab. It is run by separatist scientist, the vile Nuvo Vindi. He's resurrected the long-defeated Blue Shadow virus and mutated it into an airborne strain. Jedi Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, and Padawan Ahsoka Tano attack the lab and successfully contain the virus, or so they think. A mischievous LEP rabbit droid sets off a bomb, causing Padme, Ahsoka, Rex, and several clones to be exposed to the virus. Anakin and Obi-Wan rush to find the needed antidote, the Ruxa root. Their quest then takes them into separatist space and Iago, the planet of 1,000 moons. There they meet a plucky child named Jabo Hood, a superstitious Quarren named Amit Nolof, and the terrifying trap of Droll, the Phantom of the Moons. Can they escape in time? Fear, hope, banter, and comedy, and weirdness ensue.
That might have been one of your best summaries. That might have been some just excellent work. Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. I have probably too much fun writing them. But let's dive into this. I'm so curious. What was your overall reaction to this two-episode arc? Are we looking at a love, a like, a struggle?
We're looking at all of it. Okay, we're really looking at all of it. I don't remember these episodes, yet I've never forgotten them. I was watching. I always do, like, early in our week, I'll watch them maybe on the treadmill or something, and then I'll watch them a little bit later on to do the notes, usually the day we record, right? And the first time I watch it on the treadmill, and I'm like, I have no memory. I've never seen these episodes. But I know that's not true. I know that's not true, because on Netflix, I went through and watched every episode about 2-3 years ago. I absolutely know I've seen these before, right? And so then, yes, and then it's like, oh, yeah, that's right, Jabo and this and that. So, like, yep, I've seen it, but I had no memory. No memory of it. I don't know what that means. That's not all bad. It's not all bad. And because these episodes are not all bad. These are, I don't know, after you and I complete these reviews, Joseph, I got to be honest with you, I don't know if I'll ever see these episodes again in my life.
Really?
Yeah. But it's not bad. It's not bad.
These two episodes.
Yeah, these two episodes.
Okay, so these are not the episodes that you are putting on a list to go back and say, you know, some Saturday morning when I just want some fun with my breakfast cereal, you're not going to queue up Blue Shadow Virus and Mystery of 1,000 Moons.
This literally might be the last time I ever see these episodes. I might, unless it's by accident.
Well, then let's make the most of this. I'm so curious to dive into how and why you feel that way. I think there is something, what you're saying about you didn't have any memory of these. This is the kind of third and a half time that I've watched through Clone Wars for myself. And there are episodes that I think I remember parts of because I'm like, oh, yeah, I get it. It's that one. And then the details don't seep down. And I think, especially as the Clone Wars goes on, there's episodes that you're like, oh, I remember that chunk, but which season or which episode is that little scene I like a part of and all that? But these episodes really stood out to me because I think I just, I remembered them from, oh, this is the one where Padme gets exposed to the virus. We get to be on Naboo. And it's a real attachment episode. That's what I thought going in. And there definitely is stuff about attachment. But there's so much else just bonkers weirdness going on that have elevated these episodes for me. Like, I'm not going to put them in my love list. You know, about my love list. I'm keeping an actual list. These are both in like. But there's so much there.
What is Clone Wars love language, Joseph? What is your Clone Wars love language?
I don't know. I think it has to, I think love, it becomes love when it's really about the Jedi. That's my bias. That's my perspective. It's got some great Jedi stuff. It's got some really, really great Jedi stuff. I think I also am gravitating to the episodes of Clone Wars that are able to really take a big theme in Star Wars and really examine it in detail, and almost like it's like there are some ideas in the Skywalker saga in particular that they're a big theme statement, and then there are some beats in the film that are supporting evidence. And then there's episodes of Clone Wars that are like, this entire episode, this entire arc is all of this really specific supporting emotional, moral support for this big theme. And those are the ones that grab me a lot. And then also good Obi-Wan episodes. And there is a lot in this. I liked a lot that it dealt with attachment, but had the more immediate perspective, because a lot of these questions of attachment for Anakin are, you know, attachment to R2 or theoretical loss. And I like that this is just really immediate of like, no, for real, Padme's going to die. So there, that's a different perspective, which is great. We were saying before we started, there's a real Halloween vibe to this, because we got a right. mad scientist. It's kind of fresh to have a bio horror in Star Wars. And that's another thing I like in Clone Wars, when it can explore some genre stuff that is not in the movies per se. Another thing that I really liked about it is both episodes so pulled from Saturday morning serial. And I go on and on about how much of that it was an influence on Lucas. Not just Flash Gordon, but Captain Marvel, The Shadow, Batman, Western serials, all kinds of stuff. Nouveau Vendée is so German from when these serials were being made in the 30s, 40s, 50s. Very aware of that World War II era perspective. Nouveau Vendée is just seeped in that. And his lab. And then there's just a lot of that serial storytelling of, especially in Mystery of a Thousand Moons, we're like, well, you've got this one problem, but in order to address this problem, you have to fight a plant. You have to fight, you know, a winged bat creature. You have to figure out a way off the planet. It's just kind of one thing after another. So there's a lot of things in this that I really gravitated toward.
Yeah, no, look, this is as one should, and that's what I'm ready to just discuss it on a micro level here. What you described too, it's funny watching this these two episodes. I was thinking Indiana Jones vibe to me more than anything, not specifically, you know, just but like overall what Lucas and Spielberg were trying to do with those films. This you could take this plot and lay it down in an Indiana Jones film or something. A virus, a mad scientist. A weird land. Is it an angel? Is it an alien? We'll figure out. Like, and Indiana Jones being my favorite, you know, cinematic character. Like, I'm there for that stuff. So it did pull me in. And I'll start here with Dr. Vindi. I'll say he's not one of my favorite characters. Yet at the same time, I really love when the creators, any creators, just roll up their sleeves and have fun with what they're doing. And you could just see there's a lot of fun put into this episode. I bet there was some laughing in the writer's room or the concept rooms or George coming around. And going, make him more German. Make him go, yes, yes, yes. Like, I can just see there's fun. And Vindy shows up again in the Catalyst novel, as he's mentioned. So, hey, you know, he counts. He's there. He's part of the story. I'm ready to dive in. I'm with you on a lot of these things here. We're not going to be far apart. It's just, unlike say like Meeber, Meeber Gascon's not a good example. You know, I just do not like Riff Tamson.
Yeah. He's a shark.
He's a shark. And that's where, that bothers me. I don't know what I have against sharks. So I'm interested to see what I've discovered in those episodes. So this is one of those episodes too, where I'm like crazy mad German scientist. Do I like that in Star Wars? I'm not sure, but let's see what's there for me in this story.
Yeah. Now, as we watch this first season, I kind of want just a big team up of like Clone Wars supervillains that we don't know their final fate. I want Nouveau Vendée to meet up with Locke Dird and have a, you know, big weird voice off. That's great what you're saying about Indiana Jones, because it is, again, I kind of bang on about it because I don't want that historical perspective of where Star Wars and where Indiana Jones came from, because I think it explains a lot going forward as Star Wars evolves, how much that style of storytelling, those specific kind of cultural references and that pace, and sometimes the way the villains are depicted, so much of it comes from those, the source material of those adventure serials from the 30s, 40s, 50s that I just get kind of obsessed with that.
Well, I think you should, because I don't mean this to come off too negative to folks out there, but like audiences change and what we want out of our things that we watch and read and love. I get that they change, mature, they should, but I think that the core elements need to be there, or else it's not the thing you love. And this is one of those things. And I always wanted to come back to that you use that phrase whiz bang, which I just absolutely love. I don't want Star Wars ever to not be that and have fun. And dark, gritty stuff doesn't pull me in, but I know a lot of people want that, but it's, you can't conf- view Star Wars for that sometimes. I don't know if that makes any sense. So I'm with you. Bang away on this whiz bang drum.
I will bang away on the whole whiz bang. My last overall thing, and then we can dive into some great details because there are so many great details. This is to own my own bias. I think these are great Obi-Wan episodes. There's a ton of nuance. There's some funny Obi-Wan moments. There's some kind of heroic Obi-Wan moments. And there's a lot of just kindness towards Anakin when he knows that Anakin is really wrestling with these attachment issues with Padme. And there's this gentle tone from Obi-Wan a lot, which I think is a great choice on the directors. And I think a great performance from James Arnold Taylor.
There's some wonderful Obi-Wan moments and some ones I want to ask you about. Yeah.
Ooh, excellent. I can't wait to get at. So let's talk about the morals of the episode. The first moral is fear is a disease. Hope is its only cure. And a single chance is a galaxy of hope. These are some very, very pillars of Star Wars kinds of morals, aren't they?
Oh, this is, yeah, especially the second one. Both drive the points home, but hope, we know that word. It's almost like a joke. How many times can they say hope in a Star Wars thing? But it's and again, we'll talk about elements of Star Wars. That needs to be here. And these are some real big lessons that can have a lot of different ways. The fear one in particular, like, it takes on a lot of different forms and a lot of different versions of the lesson in these episodes.
Yeah. So which one hit you more? Which one affected you more?
I think there is this idea. Well, the one that I think means the most to me right now might be the Anakin and his fear that turns quickly into the anger. We've heard that before, and panic, which just feeds more fear and all that kind of stuff. I'm a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Don't Panic guy, but I see a lot. I've talked about, I've been, Clone Wars deals with this stuff a lot. This is why I've been banging this drum of just people misunderstand a lot of times what strength is and what fear is, I think. And I'll just say, this is an episode, Joseph, that's about a virus. We have this going on right now. And I've had the fact that I you know, believe I'm going to go ahead and wear a mask into this store. I've had it thrown in my face. That's fear. And I reject that on every level. And this episode, the fear that Anakin is experiencing is the fear Yoda is addressing. Yoda's not saying Anakin, the boy, is a coward. He knows right away that these attachments are what will destroy him. And they're on display here. So being prepared, being safe, considering others is not a weakness. And I think this episode deals with the kind of fear I want people to comprehend and grow and learn from in my Star Wars. So that's pretty big for me. I gravitated towards that one.
Yeah.
It's not just Anakin's not just in love. He is, you know, there's a sweet little moment. He kind of rubs her face at the end of the second episode, just kind of like they're safe and together. Right. It's really sweet. It's not just that. I'll just ask you right now. Do you think this is the episodes where Anakin or Obi-Wan's like, wait a minute?
I think that Obi-Wan is in a lot of denial and rewatching the Clone Wars. Really, I think I've said this before. I think Obi-Wan sees a lot that he doesn't let himself fully ruminate on. Like, he knows an Attack of the Clones when she falls out of, you know, the gunship, and Anakin almost, you know,
yeah,
stops the whole mission. And they, in that moment, Obi-Wan is like being honest and real and vulnerable. Like, dude, you're the chosen one. I can't take Dooku alone. I need you. We could end this war and you're willing to turn around. And then, you know, I think it's easy to overlook that in Attack of the Clones, Obi-Wan's all cut up. Yoda's exhausted. Dooku escaped. And Padme just goes running to Anakin, and they hug. And both Obi-Wan and Yoda are right effing there, right? Like,
yes.
So I feel like, especially as I rewatch Clone Wars,
mm-hmm,
Obi-Wan knows there's attachment. There's nothing but Satine flashing through his mind. And I think he just doesn't let himself play his thoughts out to conclusion, to the point of like, they're married. They're totally yeah, doing it. I think he's just like, he's got this big crush on her, like I had on Satine, and they're friends, and he's got a crush. And I think Obi-Wan just doesn't let himself accept it beyond that
until later, especially in season 7. No, that's great. I think it's great because that definitely starts in Tech Clones. And as someone who has been in two relationships that started secret, and it's a whole weird life story I can't get into, but for various reasons couldn't be known right away, right?
Yeah.
It's never as secret as you want to believe. And so I've had some Obi-Wans in my life. Like, are you two together? No. I mean, you are, but okay.
You know? You're just flirting, right? Like, no. Yeah. We live together.
Sorry, that was kind of probably a big question. I maybe could have stayed later, but it popped up there anyways.
No, yeah. I think that's great.
That's the fear I went to. There's also this fear of war and what it means. Like, to me, the virus kind of represents just various fill in the blank, overwhelming feelings that you feel you can't get out of, or things that are just covered, you know, and hope. Hope gets you through a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this watching these episodes was affecting. You're bringing up a lot of good things. Obviously, it is hard to ignore that. I've never been a fan in general of chemical weapon type stories because you can't reason with them. You know, I always like a villain who could make a better choice because that gives me some comfort when I watch it. And like, maybe the heroes can get through to the villain. Like, virus doesn't care. So I'm never a fan of virus episodes for that reason. And now really having to live through that, it's hard to ignore. And it is in a way kind of helping me deal with that fear of like, sometimes, you know, things aren't rational. You can't, you know, reason with a thing. It's just a danger and you have to deal with it. And I think this episode does a really great job of telling that story that, as you're saying, and it's powerful right now because we are in some ways going through it in real life, that the virus is the virus, but it is also this symbol of like a horrible thing is happening and you have to react to it. And that's where this distinction between fear and hope is really powerful to me. I think what we're seeing in these episodes is that sometimes I think in the real world, hope, and especially just repeating hope, people really quickly can see that as naive, or like you think the world's just this pretty rosy place with bunnies. And if you just hope, everything's going to be fine and the bunnies will dance and you have no connection to reality. But what this episode is showing us is like all of our heroes are like, yeah, deadly virus, super concerning. Oh, no, our friends and loved ones are actually infected. And now you get to this core Star Wars idea. You choose how you respond to that. Mm-hmm. And Anakin responds by immediately going to the worst case scenario and focusing on that fear that a bad thing has happened. What if I can't stop it? And everybody else, all of our other heroes, Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka, Rex, are all like, this is bad. So let's cling to hope because that's what we need. We need to have the smallest belief that this can work out in order to keep going and make it better. And that is what hope is. Hope is not like this blind belief that things will work out because they do. Right. It's this sustenance you need to keep going to have even the possibility of making it work out. And this episode is so explicit in that this is where fear leads you. This is where hope leads you. And I found that really powerful and really helpful for me in real life too, of when a bad thing happens, you can either just turn into fear, which curdles into anger and acting too fast like Anakin is doing in the episode, or you can take a couple steps back and hope and let that hope help you keep working toward a solution.
Yeah, a Force Center, well said. Inspiring stuff there, and ties the emotional canon connection to Rogue One. The constant use of hope in that movie, I even kind of snickered the first couple times. I get that reaction, but the more I watch that movie, the more it is what you're describing. It is not this just fairy tale hope. It is like the hope is, there's hope that this will get better, but we're going to have to get on the ground and fight for it. That's the choice we're going to make. It ties into what you and I talk about destiny a lot here in Star Wars. So it's big stuff, big stuff. So there you go. There's big stuff in these episodes, kids.
Big stuff. Yeah, I think A Single Chance is a Galaxy of Hope. That's just Rogue One. That's the power of Rogue One, because Rogue One makes that explicit. And I think that's sometimes what doesn't work when you just repeat hope. Or like, apologies to Harry Potter fans. I'm going to be a little critical of Harry Potter. Like a lot in Harry Potter, like there's a lot of like, you know what the answer is? Love. And sometimes the narrative actually plays out. What does that mean practically? Because if you don't have the narrative play out, what that means practically, then it feels empty and naive. And again, apologies to, for controversial Harry Potter fans here on Star Wars. I should keep it to controversial Star Wars opinions. But the power of Rogue One is they say hope a lot, and you can go like, oh, come on, what does that mean? And then they tell you and show you exactly what that means with the, we're going to fight here until we run out of chances. Then we're going to fight here until we run out of chances. You know, one person with a sharp stick. And then you just see it play out, and it's this literal baton of hope that becomes represented by the Death Star plans. And yeah, it doesn't work. They take the chances and they pay off, and you know, our heroes pay a price, but that hope survives.
Yeah. It's not just a winky nod to a movie from 77. Yeah,
exactly. So that's a lot of thoughts just on the morals. Let's dive into the actual themes of the episode. I think we've already started to turn them around in our heads. What do you have for yourself? What did you react to in terms of what the big themes and ideas are in the episode?
One of the ones, so we talked about fear, and I think some of the forms it takes, many forms, and hope is the antidote. But it's hard to find, kids. This idea of war and what this is saying, this what's at stake here for this war we're in, and heroes on both sides. You and I have gone into that, and also we know that this is all Palpatine pulling strings. But let's, to me, this idea that, because Vindi talks about it, and there is also a line from the Queen. Where did I put that in my notes?
I think I got it in front of me.
You read it, because I bet it's the same one.
The Senate or the Jedi Council or whoever is in charge of this terrible war.
Yes, sir. That's the one. And this episode to me, because of what you're talking about with the chemical weapons there, there is no, to me, no gray area. And so a lot of what's at stake this episode is the idea that there might be ideas on both sides. It might, maybe some communication, some listening, as Padme says, but there's no denying that the separatists in this design with this virus, it's evil. It's no gray area. It is evil. And this, that is what's at stake in this war as well. And yeah, that's a lot of what the Republic is fighting for too. There's other things to, yes, there's other little subtopics and agendas we get into. I'd love to hear again. I love Mina Montero. I mentioned that name a lot because I think it represents what that meant for George a little bit, but I think George is not going to back down from this. There is evil, and this is evil.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought that was one of the most fascinating things. And, you know, when I saw the episodes before and I really focused on the attachment, which I want to talk about as well, it took me a little bit away from some of these individual lines that you're pulling out that really made these ideas of war pop. But in particular, especially in the first episode, this incredibly complex idea of what life forms deserve to live. You know, you got Nouveau Vindi, who is clearly marked after the sort of Nazi scientist, and our pop culture storytelling about Nazi science, that it's, you know, doing, you know, dangerous illegal things. We get that in Indiana Jones, where they're touching into the supernatural. We get that in the MCU, where it's this fear of the Nazi scientist touching into the supernatural. You know, he's got the accent, he's got the little circular glasses, all that stuff. His species is a Faust, which is, you know, calling out an actual German legend. Nothing subtle about it. You've got the old machinery and the lightning, which all kind of adds up to the sort of Frankenstein mad scientist trope of giving unnatural life, which all of which kind of builds to this idea that the Blue Shadow virus should be seen as this unnatural evil. But he's really got this perspective that it's a light form in the galaxy. Wiping it out before was murder, which is, you know, a fascinating perspective, especially in Star Wars, since Star Wars usually celebrates all life matters. But the Blue Shadow virus is almost like the Sith of like, well, all life forms matter. Yes, but we kind of can't work with the ones that will just wipe out everything else, because that's not cool either. But in particular, then Nouveau Vindi also throws out, I think, this line that you were thinking about of thousands and thousands of so-called superior life forms are spreading their disease of war throughout the galaxy. Perhaps they're the ones who should be eradicated. So it is this real perspective from Nouveau Vindi of the virus is the most worthy life form in the galaxy. Mm. And you're morally impure. You should, you know, absolutely, you know, be wiped out by the Blue Shadow virus. I think that's great. And then there are just other little references to this idea of that is really important in the Clone Wars of whose life matters. Vindi calls droids his soulless automaton friends. And that's powerful to just call them soulless. And then toward the end of the second episode, when clones are dying from the Blue Shadow virus, Padme says, "What a waste." And Rex says, "With all due respect, it was what these men were born to do." And that just hit me like a ton of bricks of like how much Rex in this episode is like, yeah, that's what we were born for, to fight and try to stop, you know, evil, horrible things like this from happening. And sometimes we're going to die. So I just thought there was a lot of rich and interesting ideas about that discussion of like, how do you define value in life?
Yeah. I apologize. This is not as deep of the things you've just said here, but I don't think it's a coincidence in my mind, Star Wars wise, that this blue virus was wiped out generations ago and now has returned, just like the Sith. You just connected them, you know, in my head, and that we can't deal with the Sith. They are here to destroy. I like that in terms of Star Wars timing.
Yeah, and that's what's happening in the Clone Wars era is the Sith are airborne now, too.
Yeah.
Back out from under the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, you watch these episodes, and as you were saying, Nuvo Vindi is, yes, he is absolutely, you know, homicidal. He wants to, he seems open to, you know, having the virus maybe be a contained weapon, but you get the sense that he's developing it for the Separatists and going like, yeah, use it on one planet. Or use it on the whole galaxy, whatever. I'm fine with that. So I feel like he is clearly coded as the villain. Our heroes are clearly the heroes from trying to stop it. But we get more of this, like how almost the war opening our heroes to this rhetorical position that Nuvo Vindi is taking of like, you have ceded your moral high ground to criticize my virus when you're running around the galaxy killing each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk just a little bit more about Fear versus Hope. We already talked about it a bunch, but I really like that these episodes, again, they make it really function and functional. I feel like they ask you, you know, which makes you function better, fear or hope? Like Anakin's fear, his connection to Padme, we're all really familiar with. And it's one of those times where Anakin is relatable of like, yeah, we love Ahsoka. We love Padme. It's horrible to see the disease already eating away at them. Those clones dying in a way that we think is a waste the way Padme is. So we're on Anakin's side of like, do something, fix it. But we get this great exchange between Obi-Wan and Anakin where Obi-Wan says a great leap forward often requires first taking two steps back in Anakin counters. And sometimes all it requires is the will to jump. And I think there's a fun discussion to be had about, you know, who's right in which situation. But Obi-Wan's clearly right in this where he's, you know, saying, let's not act just on fear. Let's take a step back and figure this out. We get this expression of hope from Padme saying that she never lost faith in Anakin. But we get an expression of hope from Ahsoka when she is kind of using what might be her last words to say it will, in response to the idea that, you know, will the clone sacrifice make a difference towards peace? And she says it will. And like, we're seeing functionally and emotionally these expressions of hope and forward movement from a lot of our heroes. And then from Anakin, we're seeing this tightness from fear and anger and rushing, and it's not going to help, but the hope is functionally helping.
Yeah, and it's not flowing through him, right? What Yoda tells Luke, what the ideas behind the Force of let it guide you, what Maz tells Rey, not to hold it onto the Force, but what you're describing can be taken to our regular everyday life, and that's exactly what's going on here. Is Anakin has just got this tight grip that is going to hurt him and others around him. It's not functional. And I wrote that down too. If the two steps back for Big Leap or the will to jump, both are right. Anakin though, Anakin's not seeing it clear though. You know,
yeah.
He's going to leap before he knows where he's jumping to. And he's just misinterpreting of his own words to me in that moment. So yeah, and you can see it, the great use of the Ahsoka moment. Yeah, of the function of hope.
Yeah. And I think that's there, too, just with the kind of setup of Mystery of a Thousand Moons that, you know, sort of they're afraid of those lasers, which they have a right to be afraid of. But they have this extra fear because they have this superstition built up around it, that it's, you know, a vengeful god that nothing can ever be done about. So they're literally trapped there by their fear.
Yeah, that is. Another great use of fear. And there was less of a Jabo Hood that I got kind of silly deep on. But I wrote down Trapped on Diego, only hope can get you out. But again, the hope isn't, and this isn't to, it's not a brushing away of beliefs, you know, spiritual beliefs or anything like that. I don't think this episode's saying that, but it is just this, like, you are trapped here and you're not even, you know, you feel as though you can't even try to get out. Hope will get you going, and you can choose how to figure out from there. You know, it's simple. It's bumper sticker kind of philosophy that I like in Star Wars.
And I agree. I think this is not anything critical of, you know, actual deep faith. I think the hope is really supportive of deep faith of many kinds, and the superstition is, you know, it's fear. It's holding them back. I don't think it's they have made up a reason that they can't leave and aren't willing to figure out what is truly going on so they can. You know, they're not allowing themselves the hope that, well, maybe we could figure out the problem. They're just making up a reason that they can't deal with this problem. They're never saying it's not a problem. Obi-Wan's never like, it's not a problem. It's just lasers. What are you afraid of? You know, it's like, no, let's figure it out.
Yeah, let's roll up our sleeves, figure it out.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to leave.
Maybe you don't want to leave, Jabo Hood. Maybe you like just being fanned by battle droids at all times. last theme for me is just attachment is so clearly what's going on in this episode. I thought it had some sort of interesting shades of attachment. You brought this up, but I like Obi-Wan just knowing immediately that Anakin's probably going to put the mission at risk to try to rescue Padme, to the point where he's like, don't do that thing. I know you're going to do it. I like it that without any hesitation, Anakin straight up says he wants to kill Nuvo Vendi. Of like, that's not even about like, you know, I need to kill you in order to save people. It's just like, you put somebody I love at risk, so I want to kill you. You should die for that. It's straight up revenge.
And look, hey, fair enough. I have a particular set of skills. I like Taken. I don't like the sequels, but I like Taken. All right, I can vibe with that. But it's so interesting up top of episode 117 where the queen, and oh gosh, I wrote her name down. It is a long name that I probably would mispronounce anyways. But the queen talks about how, you know, a couple of Naboo guards like to shoot first before asking questions, which is something you and I talked about, how in season 7, there's a lot of like, well, we would have known, but Anakin killed Dooku. That's a bad strategy, just as much as it is a fault. So to take that at the beginning of the episode and to apply that to what you're just saying about Anakin, about how again, more fear, panic, rash decisions. You're going to jump, but why do you need to right now? And you're not thinking clear.
Yeah. Yeah. I also just like, as a point of comedy, when at the end of the first episode, when Anakin asks, is Padme there? And Ahsoka says, I'm okay too. Thanks for asking.
Like, yes,
he does have an attachment to Ahsoka, but it is not as developed as his attachment to Padme.
Yeah.
And then I liked the counterpoints to Anakin's sort of fear about attachment, that Padme, Ahsoka, Rex are all willing to risk themselves to stop the virus. Jar Jar 2, all the clones, that they're all just like, oh, yeah, no, this is horrible. But for the greater good, we must rush in. We must be willing to sacrifice ourselves. And, you know, that's reinforced by Obi-Wan's Jedi response of like, hey, I want to stop this virus, but it's better that we risk Naboo than the whole galaxy, which that is a theme that's been popping up a lot in these early episodes of, you know, the good of the one does not outweigh the good of the many.
Spock would agree. Tough.
Tough.
In this war. Absolutely.
Yeah. Any other themes before we move on to kind of how it reflects larger story and morality of Star Wars?
I'll submit this here. I'll submit this one here. All right. And maybe it ties transitions to what you're talking about. I'm going to admit that this is me getting silly deep here. I don't think it was super, super intentional, but I think it's present. And I think it's something that pops up again. Jabba Hood by design. Wayne Lowe, one of the concept artists who helped design the character, was told to create him to be young Anakin and young Han Solo, as if they're combined.
Mm.
And we definitely, Jabba is young Anakin in a lot of ways. Technically inclined, tinkerer, outspoken and brash, but a supportive heart, right? I think Jabba, he has a good heart, which also ties to Solo a little bit too.
Yeah.
So I think this is another sign, because I think this episode, even though I said I won't watch it again, never again, what a fist on the table statement for me, right? but like, if we're going to put together the fall of Anakin, these episodes to me are very much part of that. And so this is a little signpost to Anakin that to get forward, to get safe, to move on, to save Padme, to do those kind of things, he needs to not act out of what he's acting out right now, fear, anger, panic, paranoia, doubt, maybe even. He needs to go back to who he was at the start, and he needs to connect with his 9-year-old self. And Jabba kind of, to me, represents that. And then in Sith, we see with Source Bandima, that's Anakin slicing his past, slicing who he was. I just think, I know it's a little silly deep, but I think it's there. I think it's part of that tapestry of the fall of Anakin.
I don't think that's silly deep at all. I mean, I think the connections between Jabba and Anakin are right there. The Han Solo thing is really interesting. I didn't know about that. But yeah, I think Anakin he clearly in the episode connects with Jabba and connects with his own past when he's like, oh, you did the macro wipe or whatever that was. I didn't write that quote down. You know, and he really connects to like that ability to program the battle droids. But he doesn't fully reconnect to where he was when he was young, right? When anything was possible. You know, he's really willing and eager to move forward, but he's so consumed with fear that he's not looking at like the way that little kid was like, I can get you off this planet. I can win this race. Have you ever won a race before? Nope, but I'm feeling good about it. Like,
yeah.
And Jabba at first is just like, yeah, nothing matters. I'll sit here with my droids. But it really doesn't take him much to get him involved in the game and to reach out to him and go, actually, you know, your skills are great and we need you to help save the day.
Yeah, and to help others. Shmi would be proud.
Yeah, Shmi would be proud. Yeah, and that was definitely one of the big themes, big Star Wars themes that I thought was at work here, besides all the discussions of fear and hope and attachment, of that everyone has a value. Don't underestimate the little guy, I thought was really present again. Lots of moments of Jar Jar's clumsiness and sometimes hunger being a benefit. You know, he wants to eat the bug, which is the clue to finding the lab. You know, he trips and finds the hatch. He also possibly gets Padme exposed to the virus, but that's a larger discussion. I think Pepe Bao, the shack herder Gungan, she's also somebody who, like, at first was like, yeah, you are a little bit of, you know, who are you? Why are you here? Are you important? Are you in the way? You know, in that great Star Wars theme of like, no, she gives vital info. And in fact, when Anakin is raging and Nuvo Vindi keeps escaping him and Obi-Wan, she's the one who's able to sneak up and kick his butt. And then I think that also extended to my weird little favorite, the LEP rabbit droid, is the, like, come on, it's just a little messenger droid usually. And that's the droid that almost kills these heroes of the galaxy from stealing the vial and just setting off the bomb out of anger, allegiance to Nuvo Vindi, who knows? And I think Jabba Hood is a part of that too. Jabba's really, really in that line of, this little orphan kid with the bad attitude, how's he important to the galaxy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, Obi-Wan, you'd think he'd learn that, right? You know, going back to Phantom Menace.
A little bit better. A little bit better. Yeah. Last for me, kind of big picture theme is, we talk a lot about the organic versus the mechanical. And I think these two episodes had this interesting relationship with that, in that they were really about science and nature and how they work together. You know, in the first episode, the plot is really motivated by Nuvo Vindi kind of unnaturally resurrects this virus via, you know, science. It's a lightning and mad scientist equipment, and he makes it airborne. He makes it a strain that it didn't evolve into. He makes it that way through, you know, unnatural technology. And then something that in the second episode that is just cruel, nasty technology of that laser grid is turned into something, you know, natural, something organic, droll, a phantom, a ghost, a superstition. And it's like, actually, it's tech. It's a bunch of lasers. So I think there's just a lot. I don't think anything super explicit is being said. I don't think these episodes combine to go thumbs up on science, thumbs down on nature, anything like that. I just thought it was really interesting the way that they were, the way technology and nature were so interwoven of the virus is natural, but it's been enhanced unnaturally by science. And, oh, we think that this, that droll is the kind of thing that we would encounter in Star Wars, of like some malevolent force presence, some, you know, different, something like the Bendu exists in these moons. That's totally believable in Star Wars. Like, nah, actually it's a bunch of lasers. And the way we're going to get around it is technology. It's remote piloting of, you know, of ships. That's the way we're going to get around it. You know, the cure for the disease is made of these natural roots, you know, but there's still technology needed to process that and make it into an actual antidote. So it's a lot of interesting connection in the ideas of nature and science in Star Wars.
Well, look, I'll even say there's a, anytime a Jedi is involved, that's on display, because they're connected with the Force, but, and it guides their actions, but their actions are in a lot of technology wrapped up in their actions and what they do and what they use. So it's always present when they're involved, you know? So I like that too. I think that connects.
Yeah, no, I like that. And that is definitely one of those pressure points between the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy of, like, you know, there's no power greater than Force. We are luminous beings. Also, we have utility belts with aqua breathers. And I'm personally fine with that, because I like that merging of the organic and the mechanical. Any other thoughts on larger Star Wars themes before we take a quick break?
No, my think piece on Jabo Hood being young Anakin, I'll offer that as an exclusive OnlyFans link later on.
I am intrigued and disturbed by that. So let's take a quick break to think about the Jabo Hood OnlyFans, and we'll be right back.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com. That's JennyLanda.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back here on the Clone Wars Report to discuss some of the fun moments, the comedy moments, the action moments, and connections to canon in these two episodes of the Clone Wars. So, Ken, did you have a favorite or favorite action moments?
I have some real tiny ones, and I love the little tiny moments. That's what makes us keep coming back. There is, gosh, I think it's in the second episode. I didn't write that down. There's a moment where the clones jump on the droids, and they have, because they have no weapons, and they got to take them out.
Yeah, and they just start wailing on them.
Yeah, I just like that little detail, man. It takes all kinds. It takes fists and kicking and whatever you got to do. And plus, because it's droids. Like, I love in Sith when Obi-Wan kicks Grievous, and it's like, yeah, because of course it would. Like, I don't like it when, you know, that you see there's some kicking, you know, if you get a good heel on a droid face, that's a little different, but it should hurt. There should be a cost. And so anyways, yeah. I just like, clones are still, they're going to do it. They're going to fight the droids no matter what. And that worked yeah. for me.
I love that beat, because it's like clone, it's them doing what needs to be done, but it also feels like a clone's anger therapy, where like just the one's like pile driving him with an elbow.
Yes. Yes, in episode 118, when they first meet Jabba Hood and the whole droids, and then it's a really effective, and especially if it's a Halloween episode, I think it's spooky. It's wonderfully spooky, of the whole "Welcome to Iago, Welcome to Iago, Welcome to Iago." I think it's haunting, but also they do a good job. We're so trained, like battle droids. Oh gosh, it's not good. There's going to be a fight, and I love that Anakin jumps into it, which is one of my favorite comedy moments. But I thought that scene worked really well. And then the final one for me is there is a moment where the droidicas rolling through. It's like that blue tunnel. It's a shot over kind of like over the shoulder of the rolling droidicas, and the Attack of the Clones chorus and chase music is playing. I love that music. That little electric guitar, maybe even in there. I thought that was a great little moment and a small action moment in a big episode.
Yeah, well, nice pull. I got a couple moments for myself. I really liked in the first episode when they're first fighting their way into the lab, and Ahsoka is floating the thermal detonator using the Force, and first uses it to kind of distract the watchful eyes. And it's like, you know, Jedi should do this more. They should just float thermal detonators into the middle of some battle droids. Maybe that would work out. But I thought that was really cool. I love it when I see them solving things with the Force and a bomb. I really liked when Ahsoka was a little bit overwhelmed, and then the rubble fell on the destroyer droids, and then Obi-Wan landed on top in that hero pose. It's just because I like Obi-Wan. It's an awesome hero pose. But also, you know, I've been paying attention as we go through the relationship between Obi-Wan and Ahsoka. You know, I think it gets more strained as she pulls more towards seeing the Jedi in a different light, and Obi-Wan's so kind of all in on the general perspective of the Jedi. So it's fun to see these moments where they're a little bit more in unison, and she's still kind of learning from him.
That's great. Those are good pulls, sir.
Yay. Last one is I love those hallway scenes as well. The music pull is a great notice. I did not pick up on that, but I really like it when Ahsoka bounds off the walls and then drives a saber through the Droidica's shield. That's just a cool action moment.
Good pull. That's great.
Continues to be. I love how strong that is right away in this first season, that she is, you know, far more lithe and agile. Like Anakin and Obi-Wan do big leaps and they roll and all that, but she's something different. She's a little bit more acrobatic because of her build, and I love it when they show that.
Yeah. Everyone brings their own strengths. It's a great pull.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness, because there's a lot of weirdness in these episodes. So I have a few things that I wrote down, but what do you got?
I'll start with this. I just love kind of awkward comedy beats. I love Anakin talking to Ahsoka on the radio there, so to speak, and then running into her in the hallways and like, hey. That is Indiana Jones to me too. That could work in Star Wars. It does work in Star Wars. This is Star Wars, but like that could be a weird Indiana Jones moment. I like that. I like Vin. He's silly. Vindy's silly, but he's dangerous. He's so evil, but he's at times silly. And I like silly too, but I love the oops, what happened? That's a great moment for me. I like Anakin using Slimo. The fact that he picked up this curse word as a kid and slime ball and Hatties, I like that.
Let me ask you, when you hear that, do you feel like that is slime ball, or do you feel like Slimo belongs in George Carlin's list of seven words that can't be said on broadcast?
I mean, to be fair, I think the direct translation is slime ball, if I'm reading correctly. But no, you're not wrong. Slimo is like, there's some words in our language that you're like, okay, you can get away saying that version of it. Advert. I'm not talking about the racial words. I'm talking about like insult words. You know what I mean? Like there's a one with a P and one with a C. One maybe you can use. The other one, unless you're British. I'm with you. I think Slimo is a swear word. I think it's a bad word.
Okay. Yeah. The way he's using it, it really does have that. Like that is salty Tatooine talk that we maybe don't say here on Coruscant.
Salty Tatooine talk is. That's something. I like that.
What else you got?
I imagine this might be one of yours moments, but I'll say it. It's an Obi-Wan line. There's, I don't know. Do you have Obi-Wan stuff? I don't want to step on this.
Please share my Obi-Wan.
Two ones. I do really love that, because I love that sequence, the Welcome to Aego scene. Anakin goes crazy because he's panicked. He's fearful. And then Obi-Wan, you've just destroyed 17 defensive battle droids without suffering a scratch. Love that. I love that. Because it proves a point. It is Obi-Wan. It's old bull, young bull running down the hill story there. A little different ending. But, it's him going, great. What did you do? Like, what did that get you?
You know better. You literally you didn't take even a second to look at the fact that they're just standing there without blasters. You just ran through and started cutting them down.
And then the one falls apart, and Anakin's like, 18. Like, oh, boy, we're having a day. Yuna, I love Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is your guy. I love Obi-Wan. And I love that Obi-Wan is a little salty. Talk about salty language. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, at times I think Obi-Wan is maybe a little bit of he's a little prick. He's going to be a little prick.
Yeah, no, that's part of the reason I like him, because he's like noble, wise, patience. Also,
So when he says, cursed by whom, my twitchy friend? Like, hold on. You don't just get to walk around and call everyone twitchy.
It's a spice planet. I think I agree with you. I think that's some Obi-Wan insensitivity. Like, I don't think Obi-Wan has had a sensitivity training about Star Wars substance abuse. Like that really does come off as like, I don't think that Quarren's okay, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny. It's funny. And I'm there too. I'll say things inappropriately too. I get it. I've tried to become a better human, but I have that mean streak in me. So I saw myself in Obi-Wan in that moment and was like, oh, maybe you shouldn't say those.
No, that's great. I'm glad you you picked up on those. Those are not ones I had on my Obi-Wan list because I was trying to contain myself.
Okay, great. And then the final one, I'm saying I had a little whimsy. I do love when at the end when Padme says Annie. I think it's sweet.
Oh yeah.
And I enjoy some whimsy and sweetness in my Star Wars too.
Absolutely. There's a lot of sweetness in both these episodes. It's there between. You know, Padme and Anakin, and Obi-Wan is definitely grumpy and insensitive at moments in these episodes, as he often is. But I think that's what I really responded to is there was an energy to Obi-Wan where he's like, I know this is a massive pressure point for Anakin. So I, instead of lecturing him, I'm going to be really gentle in my tone and I'm going to really ask him to take a step back with me and use all his, you know, patience and his talent and his creativity to find the solution. And I like that tonal change. In one moment, I kind of put it under comedy because it did make me laugh, but I love it, is when Anakin's kind of losing it about how on edge he is. And it's a fine response to Obi-Wan and Yoda and everybody else constantly going, patience, patience. Anakin like, there's a virus. People are infected. I'm a little on edge. Why aren't you? And Obi-Wan says, I'm better at hiding it. And I just love the nuance of that that goes to Fear and Hope too, of like, Anakin, I care about Ahsoka, I care about Padme and Rex and my clones, and I don't want all of Naboo wiped out. I'm actually really scared. I am experiencing fear. I just need to control it. I can't broadcast it the way you seem to choose to constantly.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so it's a moment of whimsy. It's funny, but it's got some depth to it. I've seen this GIF go around, or this quote, and I never remember which episode it's from, so I was really happy to see it, of Obi-Wan saying, just another boring day saving the universe, which is just it's a kind of a great, you know, adventure serial hero thing to say, but I think it also just goes to Obi-Wan's character of, like, he really isn't in it for adventure, so he can have that, like, I did my day's work, you know? And now I can have a drink.
Such a salty, sarcastic cuss there. You know, another happy landing. Oh, shut up.
Understandable. A couple more for me. I really like it when Jabo, when Obi-Wan and Anakin say Jabo together, like it's the dumbest name. Like in this just endless litany of possibly weird, bonkers, silly names in Star Wars, that Jabo is what breaks Obi-Wan and Anakin. And the writers kind of choose to point it out.
Yeah, that's funny.
Jabo? What kind of dumb name is that, huh, Anakin? I don't know, Obi-Wan. What kind of silly name is that?
It's like they're making fun of Star Wars names, but they're the prime examples.
Yeah, I mean, they should have went Savage Opress.
Right. Oh, I get it.
Oh, because you're savage and you want to oppress us. I get it. Yeah. I see. Clever. I really liked that LEP servant droid, the rabbit droid. I always like it. They're just weird little droids. But there's a real weird tonal thing where Nuvo Vindi gives the vial to it, and he says, okay, almost like Coloni. And it kind of has a little sway. They always walk like a little sway, like they're just a little tipsy. I thought that was hilarious.
I like those droids. I think I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago, but I like them. I like them now. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Two more and I'll stop. These episodes are real funny to me. I liked a lot of how over the top Nuvo Vindi was. That was another thing about that. Like, yeah, there's nothing subtle about this. We're doing, you know, megalomaniacal mad scientist. And I liked when Anakin is threatening him on the ship and he says, yes, kill me now and spare these old bones, the blue shadow's dire embrace. If anybody ever goes like, attack the clones, Captain Phasma, that's a bit much. Like, it's lines like these that remind you, yeah, it's pulling from genre storytelling that is a bit much on purpose. It's the intent.
Yeah. As George will say, the acting is on purpose like that.
Yeah, and you should step off my soapbox a little bit to say, yep, it is a matter of taste. There are definitely parts of Star Wars that are more subtle, but I really like pulling from this source, and I love these. This could be coming straight out of the mouth of Dr. Doom or Skeletor kind of lines, you know?
Well, in a way, look, it works in this format. I you know, would this have worked live action? I don't know. They wouldn't have approached it, I think, in exactly the same way. So yeah. It works for the format. It works really well.
Snoke dances on the edge of it, right? Of raw power and kill you with the cruelest stroke. It's not as over the top, but it is definitely of that tradition.
Yeah, there's no one more over the top than Palpatine. So
there you go. My last one is that I was going to hold myself back and not write down any more, but it literally made me laugh out loud. Not snarky type LOL, actual LOL. Is there was that kind of nice moment again, Obi-Wan being a little gentler than he sometimes is to Jar Jar and saying, "I understand you had some problems. Maybe we'll get you trained up on how to use a blaster." And then Rex, poor diseased Rex, going, "I am not training him."
And then the sitcom ends.
Yeah, but anyways, Rex is normally pretty, you know, open and kind. And nope. That's a non-starter for Rex. Let's talk connections to other canon lore and stories. I thought there was a lot going on here. What did you have?
There was a lot. There was a lot. Let's dive in, but I only focus on a couple here. I do just like seeing Naboo, Captain Typho, a new queen, and I like to see Anakin and Obi-Wan kind of roaming around there in some of the familiar haunts. And considering, again, this was season one of Clone Wars, this is only 10 years after The Phantom Menace, to go back and dance in that world that they know people weren't immediately open to, but also speaking to the youngsters who are probably watching this and are now a little older going, oh gosh, yeah, it'd be like us having them go back to you know, Endor or Hoth or something in a show 10 years after, right? We're going to be like, yeah, yes, absolutely. So I thought that was pretty good, and I just liked the connections. In reading a little bit behind the scenes thing, there was a little note there I thought was funny that you got the N1 starfighters in their hangars, and the Clone Wars team, while designing them, realized that, wait a minute, if they're in their hangars, their tails, the tails of the ship, would go through the wall. And so they contacted John Knoll and said, "What'd you guys do in Phantom Menace?" And he goes, "Nothing, same thing. We just realized they had to go through the wall." Like, it's wrong. It's wrong, but you gotta roll with it. It is what it is. It's been set up. So I thought that was a fun little connection to the behind-the-scenes lore there.
Wow, that's great. I had no idea about that. Yeah, I agree with you. I loved the quality time on Naboo, the grassy wastelands, Gungan swamplands with the buried statue head, the shack, one of my favorite beasts of burden, being back in a Theed hangar and seeing how fast the politics do turn around. We've got a different queen already since Attack the Clones, Queen Niutni, played by Jameela McMillan. Niutni.
There you go.
Yeah. So, agreed. Great quality time on Naboo. What else for you?
I really like the idea, the concept of going to the moons of Iago, I think, and seeing an angel.
Yeah.
I really like that. And I got to tell you something. I actually kind of bummed. I almost put this in the disliked or questioned section of the show. So I do question it. If you're going to go that far, it's not far, but if you're going to do that, just go, hey, here's a direct reference to that thing Anakin said in that kind of infamous scene that people kind of poke fun at. If you're going to do it, I wanted a real close-up cutaway shot of Anakin going, "It is true." And not for nothing, but the angel provides some information that helps him get off the island and helps him form the antidote that saves Padme. So I like that connection. Are you an angel? No, but one's going to save your life in about 10, 12 years.
Yeah, it's going to save Padme's life in particular. Yeah, that's. I really wanted that shot of, you know, that meme where Jared Leto is at a fashion show and he sees an outfit he likes and his mouth is just hanging open, and then the meme is he buys it later for himself, so you see him walking around in it. Like, I wanted that look on Anakin's face of like, oh,
yeah,
an actual angel. Like the people from these moons used to tell me, like the space fairs used to tell me about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love the reference. If you're going to go there, really go there. But I thought it was played well. I thought the angels were a good design, and it makes sense. It's not abnormal. And the way word would travel through the galaxy, but not everyone's going to see these angels nor believe them. And that they're these kind of these creatures in Star Wars. I liked it. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, it was. I really liked seeing it. It was. It definitely kind of lived up to the way Anakin describes it. Of like, yeah, only people who kind of go to remote and dangerous parts of the galaxy would probably have been familiar with this, with these angels. So it kind of matches. I also the design of the angels was like, oh, okay, no, we're not being subtle. They are bright, glowing, and they have wings.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? Let me ask you, because this discussion goes around a lot every time there's kind of a new reference. There's can sometimes be a like, does earthly religious signifiers words exist in Star Wars? And of course, like going back to Empire, we have see you in hell. It came up in Last Jedi when Godspeed Rebels came up. People were like, what are they talking about? But these angels are called angels and they look very shining and holy, as angels do in many different interpretations of angels.
I don't have a problem with it, only because I don't know, maybe I grew up see you in hell was one of my favorite lines. I absolutely love that line. So I just never questioned. And I had one of those moments at The Last Jedi. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the many things that kind of emerged from the theater and started hearing online that people had an issue with that. And I was like, I'm here to respect your. I didn't even notice it, other than yep, that's a thing that would be said. And so I don't know. The fact that we got basic as this galactic language, that's human enough. You know, that almost wouldn't. It doesn't bother me. And not that I don't think the Force is the only thing in the galaxy, but I don't know, it might be at the center of it all. George might tell you that. Let's go to the wills, and let's go to the microtic level inside, you know, his episode 9, joking. but I think there's definitely room for other faiths and religions, you know what I mean? And so some use of that is okay to me.
Yeah. And I think Star Wars does a great job of that, of playing around with lots of not only different interpretations of the Force, but like, you know, religious and faith beliefs that come up because of where people live and how they live and all that. And I just, this is fascinating to me, because it's just like, they're angels. They're called angels, and they look like a science fiction interpretation of angels. And that's it. We're not going to discuss it any more than that. We don't know. Really interesting. But yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite canon connections. You already mentioned Jabo Hood being a real mirror for Anakin. I also like that he kind of came off as an NPC that is giving you missions. Like,
right.
You're not going to like this, but you're going to have to fight that plant. Like, ah, boy, here we go. The little bit of that connection to old Snap Wexley, that this is a little bit of a Mr. Bones precursor, especially with like the sharp teeth painted on the battle droids. How did you feel about that?
Because I've grown to really love Mr. Bones. I did not at first. I absolutely did not grow to love him a lot. I like it. I like the idea. There's something about Jabo that, again, maybe 2009, I probably didn't like as much when I first saw it. But now, I know, just him swinging on a hammock, listening to music is number one, what I kind of just want to do every day. a character like this in the galaxy existing had no other choice, but had some skills that, you know, could have been put to use for the Republic if he was recruited elsewhere or fortunate enough to be born on another planet or be in another situation. So he represents a lot of people in the galaxy during this time and what could have been, maybe if they were more involved or had a better chance. I like a lot of what he represents. And he has a real funny line too of, I didn't write that one down, but he's walking away like, 9 months.
Like, 9 months, man. Yeah. Speaking of Earth speak, he says, man.
That's the one. Yeah.
9 months, man. 9 months.
You're so right. It is a very, he's supposed to be 10 in the story, but he's a very preteen comedy. Like, 9 months, man. 9 months.
Yeah.
It's great. David
sounds a little like the kid in T2, you know, like, like he's going to teach Anakin to say hasta la vista.
Eddie Furlong of Star Wars, indeed.
Yeah. You mentioned this before, but the general picture of separatist cruelty. We've got the characters like Mina Bonteri we're going to spend more time with, who are people with the legitimate grievances, who are manipulated by but this kind of upper level, the machinery, the corporations who are investing money in mining and in, you know, new technology are not great. And this is a great one to remind us of. The separatists are doing not great things that the Jedi would want to react to, like mining Iago for spice, kicking the angels off Milius Prime and making, you know, a giant laser grid and just trapping desperate people alone in the system. Like, who cares about you? You know? So we really return to this a couple times in Clone Wars, but really strongly with Echo's whole story in season 7.
Absolutely. Yeah. Evil. Yeah.
Evil. Not great. Super bad. You know, I've been on my kick to keep track of all of the bad feelings about this, and we got two.
Right.
Obi-Wan has a bad feeling about this in the second episode, and 3PO says, I'm getting a bad feeling about this right before, and this is so great because we just talked about this in our episode looking at Obi-Wan's Hut of Exposition. 3PO asked to be shut down. He says, with your permission, I would like to shut down before I get sensory overload when they're doing brain surgery on the Separatist droid. Yeah. And I love that Padme's like, no, we need you.
Yeah, I think of that too. Yeah, we just said that. Yeah, you don't see that often. Yeah,
but he does. He asks again. My final one is just kind of tracking a lot of the relationships between people. I really like that Padme requests Anakin and Obi-Wan to come. And that might because of trust. Or, you know, sometimes people are like, we know all about the relationship from Anakin's perspective, but there are these reminders throughout that Padme is in love. And that's the way I took this one of like, she just wants to see him.
I love that you said that. Yeah, no. And we know we're robbed a lot of Padme's perspective in Revenge of the Sith. We get it, but it is what it is. I love seeing it from her point of view and giving her credit. I think there's some reasons she's in this relationship. I think the relationship can be considered trouble at times, but overall there's something real powerful there. The kids just didn't get a chance. And I like what you're saying, that we could see Padme like, yeah, I like that guy. Bring him over.
Yeah. Yeah, and then my final thing is Obi-Wan as the negotiator. You brought this up last week, I believe, when we were talking about how much that tracks. And I'd like to mention that Gungans trust General Kenobi as one of their own. And I don't know if that's because he was involved in connecting them to the Naboo. And you know, if they were like, hey, that guy was really right about us forming a symbiont circle. Or if there's something more that we haven't seen. But I like that idea that, no, he's the negotiator. He's trusted by lots of different people across the galaxy.
Love that. Yeah, no, that's definitely something that connects. And I did one little final moment too, of just Kenobi saying there's more than one way to skin a womp rat, other than a fun reference to a womp rat. To me, that tracks all the way to New Hope with, you can't win, but there's, alternatives to fighting. That Obi-Wan has the ability to look at those things from a lot of different points of view and perspectives, which is also probably why he's a good negotiator. So it tracks.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of, you know, in the pro column for Obi-Wan's skill set and personalities, when he's at his best, he's like, let me look at this from a couple different points of view and figure out the best way to go. And he's killing it in these episodes on that, calling a meeting of all the poor people of Iago and saying, hey, let's figure this out together. Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned, or these episodes, rather?
So we'll start simple. I don't know if I need to see the Shax die in such a violent manner. All right, I get the story. I do like animals. I love all of the creatures of the galaxy. So I need to see good things from time to time. So I don't know. It upset me a little bit. You know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. It was like a little bit like, yeah, deal with this right now. Shax dying. So there's that one there. And I know you love Shaq. So I don't know, maybe you were affected too by the Shaq deaths.
I didn't like seeing it. I was wishing that Pepe Bao could get him away faster.
Yeah. So look, we haven't talked too much about him. But once again, I have to dig through some long held Jar Jar issues. But look, here's the thing. I just absolutely love Ahmed Best. And so because of that, I always now, in going back on these Clone Wars episodes, am forcing myself to not just go, oh, Jar Jar. Because I do have, I was one of that crowd. And I do legitimately love Jar Jar Binks. I really do. And so it's a bit much in these early seasons for me. Just the, like, what are you dumb? Or Jar Jar, like, what are you doing? Like, pay attention. You know what I mean? I'm Qui-Gon at the table grabbing his tongue a little bit. But in saying that, Joseph, I just don't know if I want him any other way, because he always does it is not just a recurring Jar Jar's bumbling, but as you pointed out before too, like, it always leads to good. And I don't think the Force is guiding Jar Jar, like, let's make this bumbling, trippy, trips a lot guy save the day. But it's consistent. It's so that way it's always used for something good. And we talked about some of the Bombad Jedi stuff and Jar Jar being open to other allies that other people aren't, just because he sees the world from his certain point of view. And that's when I say I have to dig through some issues to find the stuff at the bottom, which is, I do love this character. So it's like question. And sometimes you question and you find the answer.
Yeah, no, I was with you. I had a little bit of a question of like, I mean, there's a lot of like, okay, Jar Jar is different and we need to have respect for that, because that is often, because A, we just should respect people who are different, and he has, you know, every right to represent Naboo as much as Padme, and that's all great. But then there's also like, yeah, he causes physical danger. Sometimes we weaponize his clumsiness.
Padme stuff. It's like, hey, yikes.
Yeah, yeah. But that one was like, okay, well, the funny thing, if he wants to eat the bug, that's the clue that gets them there. And, you know, there are other moments like that where his clumsiness or his perspective helps out. But it's like, yeah, he whips out the blaster and then he kind of just gets Padme infected, you know. And that's kind of followed up later in the episode of like, well, you know, there's still some things that you have to learn. But that was a moment where his bumbling was just like, he's very dangerous.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Not good.
Yeah.
We love him. I'm definitely going to get that Jar Jar Black Series figure, so don't worry about it.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything else you disliked or questioned?
No. I mentioned the Angels of Aiego. I only questioned jokingly, but, you know, just give me that Anakin meme, like you said.
Like, yeah, a little bit bigger reaction. Yeah, no, that was the main thing I wrote down, is the only thing I disliked or questioned is, like, there are kind of so many ideas of what Aiego was and the angels and who they were and what their moon Milius Prime was like before it was turned into a giant laser, that I was almost more like, I know you guys need to leave for the virus, which, please, mm-hmm. go save your friends. But I almost wanted to spend more time there.
Is that, Milius Prime, is that named after John Milius?
I did not find any that depth of information on that one.
I'm just trying to, there's nothing.
Is it on, I'm sure it's on Wikipedia.
I'm clicking it right now. John Milius, for those young, I don't want to assume younger people don't know that, director, 70s, 80s, contemporary of Lucas, and kind of a crazy cat himself. Yeah, it's not saying, this gotta be, come on.
Yeah.
I've gotta be.
Come on. Well, that's a great segue to the stuff, anything that we haven't talked about that I want, just kind of some fun facts that I wanted to dive into. I did look up, well, who is doing Nuvo Vindi? And it is Michael York, who is, you know, of course, immensely famous actor. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's Michael York. And this was the detail on his Wikipedia page for doing Nuvo Vindi. He is the stepfather of Rick McCallum.
What?
I know, right?
What the?
Everything is connected.
That's craziness,
right? It's amazing to think of Michael York coming in and going, yeah.
That's really good work. I mean, that makes me actually really appreciate Vindi at a level I didn't think I would. That's really great. That's really interesting. That's crazy. I didn't know Rick McCallum. Wow. See, folks. You learn something new every day.
We learn something new every day.
Michael York, man. Curb Enthusiasm, underrated turn there. Basil Expedition from Austin Powers and so much more. But God, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, Basil Exposition as a mad scientist in Star Wars. That's pretty cool. The other thing that I liked in the credits is realizing that Catherine Tabor voiced the angel. So technically, Padme is an angel in this episode.
There you go.
Finally. One other thing I wanted to throw out here as we head toward the end of the episode. You know, I bang on about those Republic serials or, you know, Saturday Morning Adventure serials. And a big part of those is they would have the cliffhangers, that the heroes would literally be in danger and you'd have to come back next week. I've always been curious, especially in an episode like this, where these episodes are connected, but at the end of the first episode, it seems like everything is fine, and it would have been pretty easy to have Padme infected or to have the virus get loose, the bomb go off, at the end of the first episode, and truly have it be a cliffhanger. But there seems to be more devotion to having it be each episode be kind of this complete cinematic arc that ends with a kind of everything's resolved shot. And the later Clone Wars plays around with that, but they never go full into bum, 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 what will happen next? And I've always wondered why, and I was curious if you had any thoughts or opinions on that.
I don't have the knowledge on it. I'll say this, though, that makes sense because often both on air and off, you and I will say, all right, so next week we're reviewing these episodes, right? And in my head, I was like, I watched this first episode. And again, no joke, kind of having no memory of these episodes, it ended. And I went, I swore Joseph said we were doing two episodes. And the next thing kind of pops up on Disney Plus, Mysteries of Thousand Moons. And I said, that doesn't seem right. So I didn't watch it right then. I went back a little later and went to our list and was like, oh God, yeah, it's connected. So totally, you're totally right. Artistic choice, whatever it is, the reason, but maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe either artistic choice that they really wanted to have cinematic because, you know, particularly in this first season, a lot of them end with the same kind of image that the movies would end on, right? Of like our heroes lined up or somebody walking off into the horizon. So I don't know if that was just that choice or if there was a thought that the market couldn't bear that, like that people wouldn't like that kind of cliffhanger or would see it as like too cheap and too sort of like, you know, because there's the jokes about those. Sometimes when they weren't executed well, those cliffhangers were real cheats, right? Of like, yeah, it looks like one thing is happening and it's not, you know?
You too. I wonder if, you know, Cartoon Network had some kind of, we needed episodic so kids can pick up. I mean, there could have been a lot of that too. But great, great thought. Great, because I felt that. Like, I swore there was two.
I just feel like, too, like I'm rewatching the first season of Mandalorian too, and like there's opportunities in the Star Wars storytelling to do that, to do the like, the child is in such danger, bam, to be continued, right? I would love to see that someday in Star Wars. And I know there are some episodes in Clone Wars that are definitely, you know, cliffhangers where we end with our character in danger. But I would be fascinated to see what would happen if it was you really leaned into it, you know?
Yeah. Maybe Mando season two.
Maybe Mando season two. We shall see very soon. Ken, if you could have an action figure of any character from this episode, who do you want?
I think there's only one answer. You might disagree, but I do think we need the Dr. Nuvo Vindi's Little Mad Scientist playset. you can mix and match your own chemicals. I don't want to encourage kids to make chemical weapons, but to be honest, these toys are for adults, and I don't want to encourage adults to make chemical weapons. But I think for the spirit of fun, I'll take the Vindy Little Mad Scientist playset.
Yeah, does it come with the little rabbit droid?
Oh, definitely. Gosh, yes, to scale. Absolutely.
Okay, I will buy that in an instant. My action figure is going to be that Quarren who's going through a rough time, Amit Noloff. As I really like the performance and I really like the character who is just like, no, troll.
Troll.
So some great action figures for us to buy in our minds. Next up, we are going to do what is the final arc for season one. There is one more episode after that in season one, but it is not in chronological order. It pops up later, the hostage crisis. So this arc of Storm over Ryloth, Innocence of Ryloth, Liberty on Ryloth is our last arc for the first season of the Clone Wars. So I'm looking forward to digging into that with you, Ken. Yeah. What do you think the moral should this episode for this episode of our podcast should be?
Well, here it is. When you think you're about to watch two episodes of the Clone Wars you don't want to watch, have hope that you'll get through them and learn the valuable lessons there for you.
That is a just beautiful moral, and it's so practical. I can apply that to my life, and I'm going to. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Yes, I do, everybody. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center to join the conversation. We'll put out a call for questions and everything that could factor into the show, but you can always reach us anytime with a good thought or question. We're on Facebook, like us at Force Center Podcast, on Instagram and YouTube as well. Subscribe over there. You can support us at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter if you want to get some merch and show the world, especially the Speculate Responsibly t-shirt as we go into new Star Wars properties and materials and shows. And then you can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/ForceCenter. A podcast is available in a lot of different spots. Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. But we also want to highlight it's available on Amazon Music, where podcasts are now pouring into daily. You and I say this stuff so many times. Sometimes I just draw a blank on where I am on saying goodbye. We do want to highlight our own stuff outside the Star Wars world and inside the Star Wars world, quite frankly. We've got my website, catnapsock.com, at catnapsock. And I do want to highlight two fun things I got to kind of do recently. I'm on Dan Morrill's new show, formerly of Screen Junkies, called All My Movies, part of the SEN Network. I was a guest on there talking about Star Wars A New Hope, which was a fun conversation to have. Dan is quite the cinephile and loves that movie, so it was good conversation. And I got to come in and do a little bit of work on the new Honest trailers out there for The Mandalorian. And look, I'll be honest, I love those guys there. And I know sometimes their snarkiness can rub people the wrong way over the sequel trilogy. I've had that tweeted to me ad nauseum the last couple of days, and I actually agree with you and respect it. And believe me, Joe Starr is one of my close friends, and we battle a lot over Star Wars sometimes. But they're great, great folks, Daniel Radford, Lon Harris, Spencer Gilbert, Joe Starr, and they brought me in and got to have fun reworking and rewatching The Mandalorian, and got a couple jokes in there. So it was kind of fun, but you can watch that on the Screen Junkies channel as well. So that's my life this week. Joseph, what about you?
Oh, that's good. Lots of wonderful Star Wars adventures and other adventures on all your podcasts. Yeah. For myself, you can find me on josephscrimshaw.com is my website. You can find links to my other podcast, Obsessed, and to comedy albums and a comedy book I wrote a long time ago. I've been resharing on social media a blog post I wrote about it just got taken. Last year, I saw this box of Halloween cereal. I love Halloween. And it was Frosted Flakes with Tony the Tiger with a Dracula cape and then all these marshmallows that are different Halloween-themed marshmallows. And it just kind of blew my mind imagining somebody who just didn't know anything about our culture going, what is this? Why is a wild animal in a cape advertising sugary cornflakes? What is this? So I wrote about that. So if you want some just Halloween fun, there's some jokes there on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. And of course, you can follow me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw. So that is it for myself, for Ken, for Nuvo Vindi and his dangerous experiments. This has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.